1290. Stay tuned.
Good afternoon and welcome to another edition of Money Talk. I'm Neil Kreisel and Diane Dula and I are your hosts every week right here on AM 1290, repeated at 11, and on Saturdays at 6. We're brought to you by Cornerstone Home Lending, whose highly trained and experienced team takes great pride in helping people with home financing, offering competitive rates and a wide array of loan programs. American Riviera Bank, smart banking for smart people in Santa Barbara at Figueroa and Anacapa Streets, and in Montecito's Upper Village. At Arlington Financial Advisors, a leading wealth management firm in Santa Barbara, providing its clients with the personal care and attention of a small independent firm, coupled with the vast resources of a major financial institution.
Good afternoon, Neil. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great because today is a Santa Barbara day that my real estate broker 20 years ago told me it was like 365 days a year. She was not completely accurate, but today is a beautiful
today
day.
Today is that day. It's a little windy for me. I'm now spoiled.
Well, I don't go outside because it will mess up my hair. I meant it was a good day to look outside.
Good to know, Neil. Good to know. Did you have a good weekend?
I certainly did.
Good. All right. Well, we have on the line with us Chris Prefontaine, who hails from Newport, Rhode Island, to talk about real estate. Chris, thanks so much for being here with us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So the first article we have today is really kind of an interesting article. It's in this weekend's Wall Street Journal, and it talks about the slowing economic growth that this country has experienced on a secular basis over the last few years. You know, we're growing at about a 2.9% GDP rate, and back in the glory days, we were growing at about 7%. And this article talks about what may seem as a crazy idea, but what if the article begins, there's a simple fix by just hiring better middle managers? And the article,
this article is really fascinating, yeah, and I love it.
Yeah, and it's an article that in order to get really the essence of it, we have to spend a little bit time, more than we usually do, going through some of the paragraphs because it's pretty rich in terms of what information it gives. And it begins by saying 5 years ago, Gallup embarked on one of the most ambitious deep dives it has ever conducted. It was an analysis based upon input of nearly 2 million employees in more than 300,000 companies. And the result confirms something Gallup has seen before. A company's productivity depends to a high degree on the quality of its managers. That's pretty obvious. But what no one saw coming, however, was the sheer size of that correlation. Gallup said the most profound, distinct, and clarifying finding in its 80-year history showed that managers just didn't influence the results of the company, but it accounted for 70% of the variance. In other words, superior team by hiring the right management is nearly three-fourths of the battle. And no other factor came even close.
And that right there says a lot. You know, it really is dependent on corporate success, on hiring the right people. And then the article goes on to talk about it's not the people who are necessarily the superstars, the gregarious, the people that are out there. It's oftentimes the people that are overlooked are the quiet, thoughtful ones that really could make or break a company.
Exactly. And one of the things they found was that the impact that these managers have on productivity was directly related to the amount of engagement that the managers were able to induce in its in their underlings.
It's really about inspiration, inspiring those people that work for you, as opposed to, you know, I think the article likens it to being a good coach as opposed to just dictating what needs to be done.
Roughly a third of the employees in the U.S. are highly engaged, Gallup found, but in successful businesses, the figure runs north of 68%. And I found this to be the most interesting. Gallup said that when they previously did surveys like this, over the decades, they found that when you ask somebody what's their priority? They would rank family first, having children, owning a home, and living in peace, and then finally having a good job. Starting around 2002, they found that it shifted, and that what became the most important factor in someone's success as a person was having a good job, which is really fascinating. It was ahead of family. It was ahead of kids. It was important for people to be engaged and have a good job. And they call that a seismic shift. And that could account for why those companies that have been working on engagement have had real success versus other companies.
And I think it also draws the parallel to the social media explosion into how people are really defining a good job as a good family. You know, I heard on the radio this morning that there's a company called Rent the Runway, which has a subscription-based service for fashion. They're now moving in, partnering with Wayfair to do a subscription for home goods, throws and what have you. And they think it's with the advent of, you know, the picture being so powerful and defines who these people are, that it makes a huge difference.
And one of the other things they found is that, you know, companies sometimes talk about corporate culture. They found that corporate culture was sort of meaningless. What was important was the culture of the group that the company actually works in. And so what they found is that in order to have the kind of engagement and dedication, you needed to make sure that middle managers, not superstars necessarily, the CEO or the senior vice president of this or that, was able to engage the employees, but it was the middle managers or the teams that worked, you know, maybe three, four, or five levels down from the top people, where there was a huge difference in how those middle managers engaged the employees.
Well, and that makes a lot of sense because those are the people that you spend most of your day working with. And so, you know, if corporate culture is just something really top down, it has very little meaning to people five, six layers beneath the CEO who's saying this is the culture.
So the next article is an interesting one, and we'll probably be talking more about it as time goes on. And it's entitled, the New York Times, it's entitled Investors Await Rules on Zones in Distress. And there's a new tax opportunity. It's called Opportunity Zones. And it was in the 2017 Tax Reform Act. And what it basically did, although what is, I guess I should really, because the article goes on to say it's not really clear what it's done yet.
I was going to say, I think the moral of this story before we get into the article is it's too soon to tell.
Right.
We don't have a lot of clarity around what this opportunity zone investing really means.
But what's attractive about it is the idea here is that if you have capital gains that you are considering realizing, if you invest in "quote unquote" an opportunity zone, which is in an area that is distressed, whether it's commercial or residential, and it's certified as an opportunity zone, and the government is running around certifying various places, a lot of places that are considered to be opportunity zones, then first of all, you can roll over your capital gain into the investment.
And that's the real attractive part of this opportunity zones.
But the other thing is, after a certain number of years, and this is what's unclear because the rules haven't been written yet, the capital gain portion that eventually you'll have to pay could be reduced substantially or even eliminated. So it's a tax shelter in a way, but it also provides for a possible serious, significant reduction in taxes. So we'll have to see what it all means. And, you know, when we come back from the break, we can talk to our guest because he's a real estate expert. He may have some ideas about this. But it's certainly an interesting idea because by not having to pay taxes on capital gains, you actually have more dollars to invest in the new venture. And the final article we have today is a reactionary article, because I don't necessarily agree with it, and I always agree with this writer, Grayson Zweig from the Wall Street Journal. And the article is entitled, Investing for the Long Term Isn't Always the Best. And what the article is saying that when you invest for the long term, you look at certain metrics. And one of the metrics you look for is in companies that are willing to invest in research and development, capital expenditures, and quite frankly, the growth industry, growth companies do that. One of the things that makes a growth company is they're not really that interested in short-term earnings. They're interested in plowing their money, or dividends. They're interested in plowing their retained earnings back into investments that will yield higher returns in the future. And what the article basically says is over a long period of time, recent studies have shown that a lot of companies that made a lot of investments and had short-term losses never made any money. And so the idea here is if you're going to invest for the long term, you better really make sure that what the company is doing makes sense, because you could end up having no earnings in the beginning and no earnings at the end. And, you know, I kind of think that, well, that may be true. It ignores the Graham and Dodd or Warren Buffett philosophy of investing is, yes, invest long term, but make sure you've done the analysis to make sure that
Well,
it
I
works.
Think that's obvious, in that you want to do your due diligence on the company. You want to make sure that it is an investment that you want to make, that you're comfortable with, that you understand the products, you understand how they make money.
Thank you for saying what I just said was obvious. I thought it was actually...
You thought it was profound.
I thought it was profound, but I guess it was obvious. You're listening to Money Talk on AM 1290 KCSB, and we'll be right back with our guest.
For prospective homebuyers, one of the most important steps of the loan process is getting clear and honest information from someone who will speak plainly and truthfully about loan programs and options.
I'm Kelly Marsh, Vice President, California, of Cornerstone Home Lending, where our highly skilled and experienced team takes great pride in helping clients obtain home financing with honest, knowledgeable, fast, friendly, and efficient service. As a Santa Barbara native who has spent the past 20 years in the mortgage industry and has closed over 4,000 loans, I'd appreciate the opportunity to earn your business and invite you to visit thekellymarshteam.com or call my office at 805-563-1100 to learn more about how Cornerstone Home Lending can help you determine the best way to manage mortgage debt to achieve a more stable financial future.
Licensed by the Department of Business Oversight under the California Residential Mortgage Lending Act. California Residential Mortgage Lending Act license number 41DB072220. California Financial Lending Law license number 60DB072528. Loan originator NMLS number 245822. Not a commitment to loan. Equal housing opportunity.
It's a fact. Successful wealth management is built on strategies that focus on the big picture, take a long-term view, and establish deep and valued relationships. Hello, I'm Diane Duva, founding partner at Arlington Financial Advisors, Santa Barbara's trusted family guide, empowering you to make more informed and confident decisions. At Arlington Financial Advisors, we bring order and balance to your financial life by monitoring and managing risk so you can focus on your work, family, and enjoying the moment. We are a fully independent firm offering strategic financial planning, estate and tax planning, and private money management. Our plans and portfolios are handcrafted using a rigorous and disciplined approach, supported by a consistent yet highly personalized client experience. Our clients look to Arlington Financial Advisors as a home away from home, a comfortable place to protect what they've accomplished while they prepare for what comes next. Please visit arlingtonfinancialadvisors.com or call me, Diane Duva, at 805-699-7300.
Welcome back to Money Talk, brought to you by Cornerstone Home Lending. Since 1988, a mortgage banker and direct lender that believes in providing in-depth loan consulting to its customers in a personalized and honest manner. And we can be reached at 805-564-1290.
Or you could email us at moneytalk1290@gmail.com. So we have with us on the line Chris Prefontaine, who is a business owner. He successfully sold his real estate business to Coldwell Banker in 2000. And he's also a coach and deals in real estate transactions with his group and team currently out of Rhode Island. Chris, thanks so much for being here with us.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, Diane.
So tell us a little bit about how you got involved in real estate and what brought you down this path.
I've actually been at it in some shape, form, or fashion since 1991 or so, so I'm going to age myself quite a bit.
I was like, you don't look that old in your marketing materials.
Well, good. Maybe that was like a middle school picture or something. Yeah, no, I started with dabbling with single-family home building. I was not a builder in the field. I had a partner in the field, and then that kind of transitioned into what you just alluded to with the franchise I had. I had a Realty Executives franchise, and I sold that to Coal Banker in 2000, and then started coaching people throughout U.S. and Canada, and then doing my own investments, and then that, of course, led to the lovely real estate crash in the 2008 range.
And so what did you do when that happened? Because that put a halt pretty much on all of real estate. No one could get a loan at that point. So is that what kind of led you into what you're doing now?
Yeah, because it was like a light switch was thrown, right? I remember February of 08, everybody has a different time in 08 when it happened to them. But literally projects that were underway to be funded stopped, and anything related to financing stopped. So, yes, that caused us to totally re-engineer how we buy and how we operate. So, for example, when that happened, I had, 22, 23 properties all over-leveraged, all signed on personally, big mistake. And so now everything we do, when I say re-engineered, we do not use banks, we do not use our own cash, and so we're not putting ourselves at jeopardy on a deal-by-deal basis.
It's funny, just earlier today I was talking with somebody about success and failure and how failure really helps to define who we are and makes us learn from things that we once thought were the right way of how to redo things. And so it sounds like that holds true for you as well. 2008 was a wake-up call for many, as well as yourself. So explain to us a little bit about what you do now.
So we buy everything. When I say we don't use banks anymore, we buy everything on what I call terms. And for us, that means one of three ways. We buy either with owner financing, where the owner perhaps in our case, owes nothing on the property and becomes sort of like the bank, you know, so we're making payments directly to them. And we do that only making principal payments, so we don't even pay interest on that. So that's a huge, huge principal pay down throughout the term of your loan with them. And then we also buy by what we call lease purchase, where we'll take over someone's payment directly to the bank for an underlying mortgage they might have on their home, and then we'll agree to cash that mortgage out sometime in the future. It could be 3, 4, 5, 7 years. Usually that's the range. So those are the two ways we buy, when I say on term. So you're not going to a bank, you know, you're not going to a committee. There's none of that.
So how does that work with the banks when you take over the loan payments? Most banks aren't willing to do that. So how do you get around that?
Okay, so what you're describing is probably when the seller transfers the deed, we call that buying subject to the existing bank loan, because that will trigger a due on sale clause. So instead, the lease purchase, the deed does not change hands. The deed stays right in the seller's names, and with very few exceptions, there's no restrictions for them to lease their property. We simply lease it and tie it to a purchase date on or before and have the right to sublease it. That's the key. So it doesn't trigger anything with the bank.
So now, why would you do that? So it's basically a flip at that point?
Well, so let's say today I lease purchase your home because either you just can't get enough for it on the open market, or you just have to leave the state, or whatever is happening that you have to make this transaction and you can't sell it conventionally. I'm going to start making your payment for you at an agreed upon date. I'm going to turn around and put a rent-to-own buyer in that property who needs time to do what? Time to get their credit enhanced, time to save more money per down payment. Time to report perhaps the IRS for a couple of years where the income's at the right level. So that gives them time and me time. And, of course, we're marking the property up and creating profit centers along the way. We're actually creating three paydays every single transaction we do. So every single home comes with three different paydays for us.
So one of the risks, I suppose, for the seller is that the occupant wrecks the house, because that's one of the reasons why, you know, people are very hesitant about letting people get into a house before they actually own it.
Yeah, so here's the difference with that. Great question. That comes up like every day. So the seller is transacting with us, and then we're subleasing it. So we are the one guaranteeing the seller that we're going to take care of the maintenance, take care of repairs, take care of taxes, etc. Now, we're passing that on to our buyer, but it's ultimately our responsibility. So what does that mean then? That means we've got a vet, we've got to pre-qualify very strongly and very strictly are buyers. So they're not tenants, they're tenant buyers. There's a big difference mentally. They're gonna go into that home like they're a buyer, they're gonna behave like a buyer, they're gonna pay for things like a buyer. The only thing is they don't have a loan yet, and key, they're gonna put up a non-refundable down payment, so we know they're serious and they are a buyer, not a renter.
When you were talking about the purchase money mortgage option, did you say that you don't pay amortization, or you do pay amortization?
When we go direct to a seller and they are what we call free and clear, there's no underlying debt, we structure a price that is such that we will make monthly payments against that price, principal only, no interest.
Okay, so basically that option would only make sense for a seller that really can't sell their house, because that would be the least attractive, I would imagine, for a seller, or someone that needs to get out and doesn't want to maintain their own mortgage payment, because they're not getting anything out of it right away.
Well, yeah,
actually, see, they get the ones that, I'll give you a direct example. So we did a 10-acre estate in Pennsylvania with one of our students, and he had on the market for $420,000. He wanted to reload. His five kids and wife were already there in Texas, and so he couldn't sell it on the open market for $420,000. We gave him his full $420,000, but we did so by saying, we're going to pay you every month $1,500 against principal for some time. In this case, it was 3 years. And at the end of that 3 years, we're going to give you the balloon payment. So it was a great deal for him. He got what, in his eyes, was a full price, quote-unquote, didn't pay a realtor because we just buy it, didn't pay any fees or anything, and was able to go to Texas. So that's a great example of someone that wasn't stressed, just wanted all the money, and didn't need it right away. That's the key. If they need it right away, terms doesn't work. If they can wait and they'll get a little bit more, they love it.
So Diane is from Boston, I'm from New York, and you're from Rhode Island, and I could tell because you said the word market, which was somewhere between Boston and New York accent.
That's right.
I'm going to try and can I put on my Boston accent to
let's hear it, break? Neil. Let's see if you can pull it out.
I can't. Okay. You're listening to Money Talk on the Santa Barbara News Press radio station, and we'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Jeff Devine from American Riviera Bank. All of our customers were once just like you, stuck with a bank that kept charging more for less. But when they finally made the decision to change banks, American Riviera Bank made the move easy with mobile deposit, online banking, free use of every ATM in the country, and a level of customer service that other banks dream of. Come in and make the move today in our downtown Santa Barbara or Montecito Upper Village branches. American Riviera Bank, smart banking for smart people.
Coming to the Santa Barbara Municipal Airport April 17th through the 21st, it's the Wings of Freedom Tour for 2019. Here's pilot and tour stop coordinator Michelle Leifhardt.
So the Wings of Freedom Tour stop will be April 17th through the 21st. The aircraft that we'll be visiting will be the B-17, B-24, the B-25, the P-51 Mustang. This year, new to the tour, will be the TP-40. People can do walkthrough tours or take rides. Call 800-568-8924, or you can go online to www.cfdn.org and make a reservation for a flight. It's really cool.
Don't miss the Wings of Freedom Tour for 2019, April 17th through the 21st at the Santa Barbara Municipal Airport. Go to cfdn.org. That's cfdn.org.
I'm Ed Giron.
And I'm Maria Long.
And we're inviting you to join us Mondays at 10 a.m. right here at AM 1290 for Community Matters,
the weekly radio forum that gives Santa Barbara's nonprofit organizations the opportunity to share solutions to community challenges.
So please join us Mondays at 10 a.m. and 8 p.m. and Sundays at 6 a.m. and 2 p.m. for Community Matters
on KZSB AM 1290, the Santa Barbara News Press radio station.
Welcome back to Money Talk, brought to you by Arlington Financial Advisors, a leading wealth management firm founded on providing thoughtful, objective, and comprehensive financial guidance for families and entities who are seeking long-term financial confidence.
And if you're just joining us, we have Chris Prefontaine, which is funny because I have a friend who lives in that same area with Chris Prefontaine. I thought for a minute you might be him, Chris, when we connected, because he's from my old haunts.
Rhode Island?
Well, close enough. I'm like 40 minutes from Rhode Island. I worked in Newport for a summer. You know how it goes.
What'd you do in Newport?
I waited tables.
So that was the best, college. That was the highest level that you could achieve there? You couldn't like work on a yacht or something? Isn't that what they do there?
I don't know. You got to ask Chris.
Well, I was going to say, what you did is what everyone does when they, when they're younger here. My son-in-law before he came to work for me, my daughter before she came to work for me, they were both in the hospitality business for sure.
Yep, the Great American Pub. Do you remember it?
Great American Pub. I'm trying to think which one.
Well,
there's,
you know.
There's 50 of them around here.
So anyways, before the break, we were talking about how Chris and his team actually, you know, helps sellers get out of their properties when they're unable to sell it in a traditional sense. So, Chris, you know, you talked about investors. What, how can a new investor become a full-time real estate entrepreneur? Is this through your coaching program?
Well, they can. I mean, I always say generically, I'm not so naive to think we're the only niche, right, that people want to do. But if you look at real estate in general, hook up with someone in the niche that you want to partake in. I mean, there's 50 different niches in real estate, roughly. So once you find your niche, then find someone that's actually doing deals. That's a big red flag when someone's out there training and teaching but they haven't done deals in, you know, 20 years. And then obviously decide if you want to go full-time, decide what that financial picture looks like, and then somebody should be able to give you a for our students, give you a roadmap to say, okay, here's what you're going to do, A through Z, and that should get you here, and here's the time frame, you know, as far as people are wanting to make a full-time transition.
So currently you are coaching people. Your business is Smart Real Estate Coach. If someone is listening to the program and is interested in learning from you, what would they do? Where would they start? Would they go to your
website? I can give you two things because it's free and you want to be able to get into free mode and, you know, dive in and see if you want to go further. They can just go to the website and go through the, if they can deal with listening to me for another hour, go ahead and go through the free webinar and just go to smartrealestatecoach.com. And if you want, for your audience, I'm probably going to open up a can of worms here with my team, but I can give them my best-selling book, and I can pay for the shipping. We usually do that on the shows if you guys want me to do that.
Oh, that'd be great. If people are interested, I'll reiterate, in case they missed it with your accent, that if you're interested in getting Chris's book, he would be willing to pay for the shipping to get it in your hands to see if he would be a good fit for you.
Yeah, I'll give you the link. It's just free, F-R-E-E. And then SREC for Smart Real Estate Coach. So free SRECbook.com. And I just can't stand when someone says, get my free book, and you got to go put your credit card in. So you won't do anything. It's totally free. We'll ship it to you. You just got to put your address in there.
So why? I've always, you know, thought this was something that I never could really put my finger on. Why would somebody, it's not a necessarily a negative thing. I mean, Trump did it. Why would someone successful in an area of business want to be in the business of coaching other people? It seems like your time could be spent more dealing with capital transactions than being a teacher. You know, the old joke, you know, teachers teach and business people do. And by the way, I've been a teacher.
I was going to say, just for the record, Neil has taught finance classes.
Yeah, so I'm not criticizing teaching. I love teaching. It's just that what is motivating you to spend a part of your time teaching, which must be less profitable, or I would assume it is, than actually doing real estate transactions?
Okay, this is good, you know, because this actually brings out why and what we do. So let's say you're a student. It doesn't matter where. Pick a state. We've got 60-something people now in different states. And we don't just teach, because I can teach and I can sell, you know, there's a bunch of garbage out there. People sell it and they just go away. But the problem is there's no hands-on, so we don't just teach. We actually partner, we call them associates around the country, with associates and do deals with them. So it's our way of not knowing entirely each different marketplace and having what I call boots on the ground there to go ahead and do deals with us. So we actually increase dramatically the amount of deals we're doing by doing them with students. And so that's great exposure and growth for us, and for them, they get hands-on training, which frankly doesn't exist. It just doesn't. I mean, we're doing the deals with them. We're calling sellers with them, calling buyers with them, and that hands-on is, in my opinion, an enormous gap that was missing in the business, because someone goes to a seminar, and then they go, okay, like, I'm naked. I don't know what to do next. Or I go through a course, and I don't get to do deals. I get calls weekly and people saying, oh, you can't imagine how much money I spent, but I haven't done a deal yet. So that's the gap we close.
What is the distribution of wealthy versus non-wealthy communities? I would think that your scheme would work, not scheme, but your method of operation would be more successful, or at least have more opportunities in an area that has a less than robust housing market, as opposed to a place where prices are very, very high already.
Okay, so I'll give you the two that come to mind. We go from a low of 150 to 250 in my Arizona student, and then in D.C., we go from 800,000 to 1.8 million. Both of those top earners with us, both of those quite active, and those are opposite ends of the spectrum. So profit-wise and price-wise, that's our low in our high market right now with our students out of 60-some-odd students. So it doesn't matter what market. Now, would this work well or quite active in a market once you get over 2 million? A little tough, but not unheard of, but tough to go ahead and build a scalable, repeatable business with it. Everything underneath that is great.
So you call them your students. Do they ever graduate, or do they stay? Is the relationship? Are you in a long term? Do they turn in from students to business partners?
Yeah. So we don't want to stay in their life forever. So they have a cap. When I say we do deals with them, they have a cap. And just for the sake of 10,000-foot view, let's say it's 10 deals. So after 10 deals, they got it. Like, it's not that they're never going to have a nuance that's tricky, but they got the gist of it. And quite frankly, at that point, they've earned quite a lot of money, so they can go ahead and scale it themselves. And now, most of them have said, well, I kind of want to hang out with you. I mean, it's our family that runs this, and they become kind of family. And so they continue to do the weekly calls and stay on the Slack platform and, you know, network with us because they just love the environment and the community. But we don't rev share at that point. They don't need us at that point.
Do you see these people? I mean, is there a socialization that takes place too?
Yeah, it's quite a community. We have twice a year we have events. One's coming up in April and one in September. So they all come to that. And then we have masterminds with them, mastermind groups. And then we have online forums that do the same. So every day, literally, this private group is talking on Slack and communicating amongst each other.
We have to define Slack for Neil. So, Neil, what Slack is it's an internal way for teams to communicate. It's kind of like a internal chat, if you will, for companies.
How do you know?
Private,
that? How do you know that?
Because we hail from different generations.
So are you saying that because I'm older than you, I wouldn't know what the word Slack meant?
Well, you would know what Slack would mean, but it would be in the wrong context.
I thought Slack were men's pants.
See? Wrong context.
That was not what it is?
No. So how many students do you take on at one point that are active, that are no longer kind of, I'll call them, you know, graduated into just the community, but still in that student phase?
Yeah, so there's hundreds of students that go through our base course. It's on an online course, and then they have to apply if they want to kind of move, use the word graduation, if they want to move up to the associate level where they're actually doing deals with us, and then there's the cap out. So actively in the associate level who have applied and been accepted in working with us, there's probably 64 or 5 of them.
Perfect. So it's kind of like a three-tiered. So the first step is to go through the online course. And I've got to imagine that that's a good way for you to figure out who's serious about it and for them to figure out whether or not your methodology works for them and their specific communities that they're looking to invest in.
Do you have any licensing issues? You know, when you're dealing with real estate or any financial transaction across states, you could be stepping on some rules. How do you make sure you're not that you're in compliance with all the different state regulations?
Yeah, each associate, you know, checks out their own laws, but I'll tell you that still to date, you can buy, I can buy, Diane can buy and sell our own property anytime. That's why you have for sale by owners and things like that going on. So it's no different than that. An investor can go buy a home, sell a home, put a home under lease purchase. They're not providing a service. They're doing their own property. Big difference. Licensing comes into play when you're providing the service.
Well, but I was really talking about the tutoring part. Teaching finance, you know, is there any securities laws or anything like that?
Oh, gotcha. No, because we're teaching, so the online course and our phone calls are all teaching real estate investing techniques versus a fund or an investment, quote unquote. It's not that. It's how to go procure property and sell property.
You're listening to Money Talk on AM 1290 KZSB, and we'll be right back.
The Foundation for Santa Barbara City College is a nonprofit organization which supports our own Santa Barbara City College. The Foundation for Santa Barbara City College, or SBCC, funds scholarships, childcare, book grants, and other programs. Without these, many students simply would not be able to attend college. There is an amazing range of academic and vocational studies offered at City College which encourage students to find their passion and their talents. As a donor to the foundation, you have the power to change lives. Please help our community college by donating to the Foundation for SBCC. Call 730-4401 or visit us at sbccfoundation.org to find out how you can help. That's 730-4401 or sbccfoundation.org.
You're not wired to have a response to this sound. You're neutral to it. You hear it every time you finish a meal and never feel anything. But if we were able to associate this sound with a new stimulus, save the food, we've achieved pulling a natural response from you. Save the food. Why are we doing this, you may ask? Save the food. Because this ad is trying to change your after-meal behavior through brainwashing. Because food waste costs the average family $1,500 a year. Save the food. Cha-ching. And $1,500 extra is like getting a pay raise. Save the food. Cha-ching.
You're promoted.
Which could pay for your child's braces. Save the food.
Cha-ching. You're promoted.
Check out my braces.
So when you hear this sound, rethink your behavior. Cook it, store it, share it. Just don't waste it. For tips and recipes, visit savethefood.com. Brought to you by NRDC and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Money Talk, brought to you by American Riviera Bank, making your life easier with cutting-edge technology, mobile deposits, free use of every ATM machine in the country, and a level of service other banks can only dream about.
And if you're just joining us, we have Chris Prefontaine on the line, who's a business owner, real estate coach, and best-selling author, hailing from Rhode Island. Thanks for being with us, Chris.
Thank you.
So, Chris, before the break, we were breaking down the ways that people engage with you and your investors and what that means. I couldn't help but to think, what happens when one of your students has a disaster? How do you help out, and what happens in that case?
Well, disaster is pretty obviously all-encompassing, but we're consultants, right, as far as the relationship. So if they have a snag, they have a curveball, they have something a seller or a buyer said to them, they're calling us or they're hitting us on our online platform, and we're going to do the best to advise them. So if it gets too deep into, well, that's a legal issue or that's an accounting issue, then we tell them to go seek that kind of advice. It just depends on when you say disaster, what type and how deep, obviously, but we're there to consult them.
And so do you also maintain relationships with banks that may lead you down the path where instead of, you know, let's say you have a lease to own person that falls through, but you really see potential in this property where you might want to do some capital improvements or some other issues? Do you maintain those relationships, and do you ever refinance them and take them on in a more traditional sense?
Well, and we have not. I can maybe think of one exception out of 400 or 500 deals in the last several years. But what you described is perfectly, it's a good avenue if you needed to. I would always go the route first of calling and renegotiating, because our agreement gives us a right to do that, with the seller. So perhaps getting an extra year or getting an extra whatever you need to go ahead and turn that house back around. If a lease-to-own buyer was not able to perform, and with our vetting process, that's probably only about 10% of the time. But we do have time to do what? We could sell on the open market. We could sell with a realtor. We could ask for more time and put another tenant buyer. So there's all kinds of other options before going the route of, hey, I might have to sign and actually get a conventional loan. Because to this day, we have 50 or 60 properties, for example, our family, not counting all the students, and not one of them are we on a loan for, and so that's what we teach.
And what about insurance, property and casualty insurance? You're buying insurance for a lot of properties. Have you ever considered, you know, consolidating that to get some buying power?
Yeah, so the ones that we own, we do use the largest national carrier. And then the ones that are lease purchase, remember, those policies are staying in the name of the seller, of the person on record. And so those homeowner policies just stay in place.
So running a family business, share with us what it's like to have your daughter, your son, your son-in-law, everybody part of the family. And what advice do you have for those people out there that are either thinking about opening a family business or, you know, bringing the kids on as they become mature enough to take on the responsibilities?
Yeah, I think it's really cool. A lot of our students come because of that. They'll say, well, I've got my kids that are coming up through it, or I've been trying to do that with them now. One of the things that helps us is having the core values as a team, because any decision, any hiring, any firing, any accepting even of a student is all based on the core values which we all design together. So it's not like somebody, you guys mentioned like top-down culture before and the challenge with that. Well, that's exactly right. We all together, including the kids and the family and the other team members, decide on the core values, and then therefore there's no really, you know, there's no conflict because everybody decided these are the values that we're going to live by. So that seems to help us tremendously. It certainly gets rid of any doubt, uncertainty, or conflict.
So you've gotten into becoming an author, and you have a best-selling book called The Real Estate on Your Terms. And now you're currently co-authoring The New Rules of Real Estate Investing. What tips can we expect to hear from this book, and what do you see, you know, why are you writing?
Yeah, it's pretty cool. I've got obviously our podcast, and I've been able to meet, fortunate enough to meet so many cool people in different niches. You know, we don't just bring people on that are in our niche on purpose. So you've got in this book 24 experts, counting ourselves, and it's co-authored with my son Nick and my son-in-law Zach. So you've got all of our internal stuff that we do, plus all these other different niches. So people could use it one of a few different ways. They could use it to refine some skills inside of real estate, because it's all different. I mean, there's tax liens, there's our niche, there's flipping, there's everything in there. Or they could use it to say, I'm already in business, I'm already successful, I want to add one other niche, or I want to add another profit center. Or they could just use it to kind of refocus. There's a lot of cool stories in there, not just teaching and skill sets, but also, you know, life stories in there. And then we have a free resource that's going to come with that, and that comes out in May. So they can literally go onto this free resource site and get anything that was mentioned in the book by any one of the people featured in the chapters.
So if I was looking to purchase the book, would you recommend that I wait until the new book comes out, or are they a tandem package?
Good question. Totally, entirely separate. So Real Estate on Your Terms is taking you inside of our niche, how to buy on terms without using banks, and doesn't matter what your credit is, and literally going from A through Z what we do. Whereas new rules of real estate with the 24 experts is going to all different types of niches in real estate. So the Real Estate on Your Terms would definitely be the foundational book no matter what.
So I've got to imagine with Real Estate on Terms, you know, the most challenging part must be to find those sellers that are not willing to sell it on the open market for whatever the reason is. How do you go about locating people in that space?
Yeah, we primarily get all our I'll call them leads, from for rent by owners, so people that have owned property, a lot of landlords in there, and some of them are just tired of it. For sale by owners, they're on the open market and couldn't sell, like you just said, for whatever reason. And the third category is expired listings, meaning they were on with a realtor, and for whatever reason, those didn't sell. So all three of those categories makes up about 95% of where we find our properties and where we find our sellers to speak with.
So by definition, when you go in to look at a property, there's some issue. I mean, it may not be insurmountable, and based on your success, it obviously isn't insurmountable, but there is an issue there, whether it's high price, whether it's the neighborhood, whether it's the condition of the property. You're always going to be coming into something that for whatever reason didn't sell.
Yeah, we fix problems. I mean, it's not. It could be those things you said. It could be a personal issue, like it's a divorce and there's some things going on. We recently bought a home just under $1 million where the woman was taking care of her mom and wanted to hang out and live in the house for a little while. And so we structured a deal where she could do that. Well, in the conventional market, that's a little tougher to do. So they're just all different scenarios. Keeping in mind is in the United States, roughly speaking, there's about a third of the properties that are debt-free. I mean, debt-free. So it's a great group to speak with. If they needed the cash, they would have already pulled it out, and many of them for estate planning and other reasons are great with doing terms. The building I'm sitting in, speaking with you right now, we purchased in November for our own offices, and we did it without a bank. We did it without a financing. So it's not always a stress situation. It's just a situation.
Well, yeah, and I don't know if everyone here listening realizes that when you take back owner financing, you're creating an installment sale, so your capital gain is limited to the amount of cash that you get, and that's a big advantage for people you're doing business with.
Correct, absolutely.
So, what do you guys talk about at Thanksgiving dinner?
You know, this goes back to the family thing that Diane asked. We have a cool rule. Nothing negative comes home. So unless it's positive, we don't bring it up. And we kiddingly will, my son lives right next door to me right now, and we'll kiddingly say at the end of the day, hey, how was your day? You know, like we didn't see each other all day. So we keep it separate.
Wow. You know.
Easier said than done.
It is. All the more power to you. You should have another book on family counseling. Forget about real estate. I think that would be very valuable. You're listening to Money Talk on AM 1290 KZSB, and we'll be right back with our final segment.
Hi, I'm Jeff Devine from American Riviera Bank. All of our customers were once just like you, stuck with a bank that kept charging more for less. But when they finally made the decision to change banks, American Riviera Bank made the move easy with mobile deposit, online banking, free use of every ATM in the country, and a level of customer service that other banks dream of. Come in and make the move today in our downtown Santa Barbara or Montecito Upper Village branches. American Riviera Bank, smart banking for smart people.
For prospective homebuyers, one of the most important steps of the loan process is getting clear and honest information from someone who will speak plainly and truthfully about loan programs and options.
I'm Kelly Marsh, Vice President, California, of Cornerstone Home Lending, where our highly skilled and experienced team takes great pride in helping clients obtain home financing with honest, knowledgeable, fast, friendly, and efficient service. As a Santa Barbara native who has spent the past 20 years in the mortgage industry and has closed over 4,000 loans, I'd appreciate the opportunity to earn your business and invite you to visit thekellymarshteam.com or call my office at 805-563-1100 to learn more about how Cornerstone Home Lending can help you determine the best way to manage mortgage debt to achieve a more stable financial future.
Licensed by the Department of Business Oversight under the California Residential Mortgage Lending Act. California Residential Mortgage Lending Act license number 41DB072220. California Financial Lending Law license number 60DB072528. Loan originator NMLS number 245822. Not a commitment to loan. Equal housing opportunity.
A word from the cast of Hot in Cleveland.
Want to hear a joke?
Yeah, sure.
What's the number one killer of women?
Well, you're still here, so that rules out crankiness.
And tracksuits.
Heart disease.
But that's a joke?
No, it's an absolute fact, but the American Heart Association says you can save lives by passing it along to five women you love.
Aww.
So I'm starting with three I tolerate. That's a joke.
Find out more at goredforwomen.org.
Welcome back to Money Talk, brought to you by Arlington Financial Advisors, a leading wealth management firm founded on providing thoughtful, objective, and comprehensive financial guidance for families and entities who are seeking long-term financial confidence.
And we have on the line with us Chris Prefontaine, who is a business owner, a family business owner, actually, and also the Smart Real Estate Coach. So how would you say your students normally come to you? I guess this is twofold. How do they find you? And is this usually somebody's primary job of responsibility, or are they dabbling in it as a second path or second revenue source?
Yeah, so they typically find us through either our podcast or, you know, the book, obviously. So they'll find us that way. When people are searching online, I alluded to earlier the challenge in the industry of people not getting, like, practical, I can go do a deal now. They're just buying courses that don't get them to that next step. So when they go on search, and they'll typically find us that way. And we've got about, 50% of the people actively working with us that we talk to on a regular basis would on their pathway would want to make it their primary. Others are quite content to use it as a supplemental, right, and just do a few deals a year. And so you've got quite a mix. And we've got age-wise a mix from, I think, the youngest is 32 and the oldest is 73.
Oh, wow. That is quite a big age bracket. And now, do you personally do all the coaching, or do you have, let's say you take me on as an associate. Is it primarily you I'd be working with or somebody on your team?
Okay, so it's pretty cool what we do. So we have in the team, organically, kind of just everybody kind of fell into their place with the family. So Nick,
love it when that happens.
All our buyers, and then the sellers deal with myself and my son-in-law, Zach. So same thing happens. If you're a client and you're at the very early stages, either myself or Zach are going to be launching your business. And then when you're dealing with sellers, it's one of us. When you get to the buyer stage, it's going to be my son, Nick. When you get to the point of, hey, I don't know how to fill the forms, I don't know how to do this or that, it might be one of the team support team or my daughter, Kayla. So everything we do on a regular basis for our own deals, we do the same with the students. Everybody has a role.
And if you look at least when I look at history, it would seem that individual transactions tend to do better when the market is either down or bottomed or about to go up again, when no one wants to buy. And it's more dangerous. I mean, sounds like an obvious statement. It was more dangerous when it's at a peak. And, people are always more likely to buy when it's at a peak because they get the crowd cheering. And it's very difficult to buy when you should be at the bottom. If you look at all of the macroeconomic statistics today, it appears that the housing market, if not peaking, is certainly flattening out. So is this a difficult time to be speculating on single-family homes?
Yeah, so here's what happens with us. So let's go back to 13 and bring it through that question. So in 13, people are having trouble selling. So me speaking to sellers would be hypothetically 15 or 17 sellers I'd speak to, and I'd get a deal. Now the market got a little better, so the homes are selling more readily. More for sale by owners are selling, so I might have to talk to, say, 30 to get a deal. So it's just more people I have to talk to. They're still out there. As far as the buyers, especially when you're dealing with first-time home buyers all around the country, people are going to continue to get married. People are going to continue to buy. All we're doing is giving them a pathway to help segue that, whether it be credit or down payment. So what you described is more in the conventional market, I'm going to buy and sell conventionally, I'm going to go get a bank loan and all that, versus terms. Because, frankly, if I talked to a seller today, and I spoke to a seller in North Carolina, and I said, how far out would you go owner financing if you got your price? And he said, 10 years. Now, in 10 years, I have plenty of time for principal pay down in the market to do whatever the heck it wants to do. And so when the market starts pulling back now a little bit, like you said, it might happen or it might just stay flat, I'll get back to the ratio of only calling a few sellers and being able to transact a deal. So either way the market goes, I frankly love it. It's just a matter of knowing when to pivot.
Do you know what percentage you should go above market in order to get the deal done? Do you have algorithms or some sophisticated software that you use?
No sophisticated software. We'll do comparables just like anyone else would. The big difference with us is a seller typically is going to forego that commission and some other fees when they're working with us. So a lot of times we can stay at nice pricing still and don't have to go to premium. The only time a premium comes into play is when we're doing owner financing and can get a long enough term. Price almost becomes a moot point as long as I get a long enough term.
All real estate ultimately is as true for politics is local. And so final question, you really need to be, in a sense, an expert in every place in order to do this successfully?
I need to have the core, when I say our team needs to have the core techniques and skill sets, and then the individual, the boots on the ground, as I said earlier, is going to be the one that understands more of the metrics in he or she's immediate market.
Thanks, Chris. Thanks for being here. And to get in touch with you, you have a website which is called
SmartRealEstateCoach.com.
Great. Thank you. You've been listening to Money Talk. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.
It's